Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
This is Up All Night on 5 Live. I'm Dotun Adebayo, and coming up in this hour, well, we'll open up the phone lines for our Friday morning phone-in. It's our techie phone-in, so any questions that you might have about issues of your computer, your phone, your laptop, your tablets, your telly, your radio, any gadget that you've got at home that you've got a problem with, our gadget detective might be able to solve it. 0500 909 693 is the number to call to talk to him directly. That's 0500 909 693. You can text him on 85058 or email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. Linda from Woking says, "Hi, Fevzy. I have problems with the sound on my laptop. It's too quiet, even at full volume. I've tried headphones, but the computer cuts the volume more. It's as if the maker doesn't want people to damage their hearing. But when you're old, as I am, your hearing is, of course, not as good. Would getting extra speakers help? My laptop is an Acer Aspire Switch 10. Fevzy Turkup, over to you.
Morning. Hi, Linda. Well, the sound level of laptops has never been tremendous. Some are better than others. If it's the case that it's always been that quiet, then we're probably not looking at a fault. If you say to me, it used to be a lot louder, but now it's not, I'd say to you maybe tweak the drivers, which are the bit of software that sits between the operating system and the speaker circuitry. It might be that it's inadvertently got turned down. So you could have a look at that in any event and see if the volume settings on it are as high as they can be. Bear in mind, you don't always want to go up to the maximum volume, because most speaker and amplifiers start distorting when you get towards, 10 out of 10, as it were, or dare I say, even 11 out of 10. So be aware of that, but just see if you can tweak it upwards. Certainly a pair of external amplified speakers will obviously be a lot louder. What I would suggest you do is maybe, instead of getting the audio output, like the headphone jack, and just using that to feed a set of speakers, what I would suggest you do is get something that will take the sound out of the computer digitally via, say, the USB connector, and then have a set of speakers that can convert that, or a little adapter, digital to analog adapter. And the reason for that is that sometimes you don't really notice the inadequacies of the sound cards built into laptops when they're on the little speakers, because they're limited by the speakers. But if you just take the sound straight from the sound circuits inside the laptop, you might find that when it's on a nice pair of speakers that it sounds even worse. So and the reason for that is not only because they often use cheap components, which they do, but also because the sound electronics are built into a very tightly packed laptop with lots of other electronic things going on, and they're susceptible to interference. Whereas if you get the sound out digitally via the USB connector, and you attach that to a device that can cost you about sort of £15 or £20 that will convert digital audio into analog audio, that could then feed a standard set of speakers. And I'd suggest that might be a good way to go. But first step is just see if you can turn up the volume in the driver settings on your laptop.
Can Fevzy recommend a free provider to turn WMA files into MP3s? Says Phil, who also has a tune for Donald Trump. He's gone for "You Won't Get Me" because I'm part of the union, as a degree of irony. And we'll leave that to one side. What about this WMA files into MP3s?
I'm not sure. If I may come back to you on that one, because when you said free, I'm not sure. The general advice I'd give you about some of these free converters, there are some good ones out there, and I have used some, but there's a lot of that free stuff, and particularly with regard to converting from one sound format to another, a lot of it has got spyware in it as well. So I don't just want to throw a name off the top of my head without checking first, but I will check. Who was that question from?
Oh, now you've got me. This was I'll tell you in just a second. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that.
It was from Phil.
If someone can email me Phil's details, I'll be happy to email him a recommendation, but I don't want to do it off the top of my head.
Yeah, can somebody email Fevzy Phil's details? Yep. No, they're all saying no, Fevzy. No,
I'm only kidding. Honestly, I'm trustworthy.
I'm only kidding.
I won't plague him in any way, I promise.
Let's take some calls. 0500 909 693 is the number to go. If you've got a techie problem, a gadget problem that you want Fevzy to fix tonight, then give him a call. Dominic in Glasgow, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Very good. Go ahead.
Listen, before I go into it, I'll be brief, but I'm no expert, as you'll soon discover, but on your Phil's call or text about converters, there was my old neighbour who was a whiz at these things, and I don't know if I can use brand names, as it were, but he recommended, and I've got on my computer, is it Wondershare, Fergie, which is not a free one. But very cheap, and I found that very useful for converters.
Okay, I haven't used it, so I can't vouch for it. But
I'm very, very basic in my understanding, and I can use it. So that's all I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, the variations are sometimes also to do with, there's ease of use, which is, you know, Dominic's highlighted quite rightly. But some are better at doing it than others, because when you go from to MP3, that's what's called a compressed audio format. That's to say that in creating the MP3 file, they throw away a lot of the data to make it as small as possible. It's a throwback to the days when, you know, storage on particularly portable devices was really limited. It's less of a problem now. But some MP3 encoders will be more effective than others. Some will allow you to have a higher quality MP3 file. So not all MP3s are the same. So the thing I'd say to Phil is also look at when you are evaluating the software, look at the different settings that it allows you. Look at, for example, the bit rate and the compression ratio and so forth, and see if you can get one that will give you the optimal balance between sound quality and the size of the file.
Dominic, what a shame we couldn't get to your questions. We've run out of time. It's the end of the programme.
Yeah.
It's the end of the programme.
Are we not an extended show tonight?
Just for Dominic, yeah. Let's stay open till 5 in the morning for Dominic. Go ahead, mate.
Well, the programme is up all night, Don.
It is indeed.
Anyway, sorry, right, as I say, I'm far from an expert. I'm in my 60s and I just kind of have a laptop to survive in certain things. I don't do very much with it. Now, I know probably what I'm going to hear is you should change it or something like that. It's an 8-year-old laptop, it's a Lenovo. It came supplied with Windows Vista, which, as I've discovered from many people, is not very good, and I should probably change it for something else, which is the first point, really, firstly, I would like advice on. Secondly, I'm getting messages up now. Again, my old neighbour, who was a whiz, he said, look, don't pay for McAfee and all this malarkey. He said, use Windows Security Essentials, it's free, Bob. And I found that very effective. I'm now getting messages up when I log in to say that Windows will no longer support, or Microsoft will no longer support XP. Now, I don't have XP or Vista, but I know they're both ancient. So, A, would I be sensible in upgrading perhaps both my laptop as well as my software? And, you know, and is the security for that okay at the moment? Because I've kind of, Adobe, when it comes up for an update, it's now said you can have McAfee for free or something.
Yeah,
I've just ticked the box at the moment. So that's the essence of my inquiry.
Okay. All right, Dominic. So a few questions there. First of all, an 8-year-old laptop is nearing the end of its useful life for general use. That's not to say that, you know, I have 8-year-old laptops I have dedicated to one.
I think you covered this last week, actually.
So sometimes you can dedicate them to one particular task. So, does the laptop have all the original hardware? For example, the hard disk drive inside it is the original
one. Nothing's been done to it at all.
Okay. So, Dominic, one of my worries would be that 8 years, particularly in a laptop which may have seen a bit of movement over those 8 years. I don't know if you transported it much.
No, I don't.
But even so, eight years means that drive could fail at any time.
Yeah.
So, first of all, make sure you've got proper backups. I mean, are you in a position to spend, you know, £350 on a new laptop?
Well, I think it's a case of probably needs must, so I would have to find that, yeah.
Yeah, because you're going to have quite a lot of faffing around. The Windows Vista is not supported, and that's dangerous on any, as is not Windows XP, so you'd have to more or less jump to Windows 7, but then it's hard to find Windows 7 now, because it's although it's a very good operating system, it's far from current, so it's difficult to find.
Because I've heard all these listeners contacting you about the issues they've had with Windows 10.
But the thing to say, of course, if you went for a new laptop at this point, Dominic, it would almost certainly be a Windows 10 laptop, and you'd have a bit of a learning curve. But you see, if you upgrade the operating system, You will struggle to find all the drivers and twiddly bits of software that are required to make your particular laptop work with that particular operating system. It's far better to buy a laptop or any computer running the operating system that it's eventually going to be running, at least for a period. You may upgrade it again in the future. But what I'm saying is, if you buy a machine with Windows 10 already on it, it's going to work more smoothly than if you try and upgrade that one, even ignoring the age of the machine. Just the fact that your laptop is a bit like a Meccano set. It's got bits it's got bits in it from, you know, many different manufacturers.
Yes, old enough to remember a Meccano.
but what I'm saying is, so the people that do the graphics chip, maybe for example Nvidia or AMD, they may not have produced the driver software which is required to get that particular graphics chip to work properly under the new operating system. And if you're not technical, you could waste half the money you'd spend on a new laptop trying to get the old one to work. And you'd still end up with an old, slow, out of warranty laptop, which probably won't be very stable. So I would say bite the bullet, buy a new laptop. If you can get one with a solid state drive in it instead of a conventional rotating disk, it will be much faster.
You mentioned that last week, I think, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Try and get one with at least 4 gigabytes of RAM, preferably one that can be upgraded to at least 8. Try and get one with an Intel processor, ideally something like an i3 or an i5, depending on your budget. Beyond that, be aware of the screen. Try and get one that's got a resolution. So this is to do with the number of dots on the screen in the horizontal and vertical direction. A lot of the entry-level laptops, their vertical resolution, i.e. the number of lines on the screen, tops out at 768. That's a bit on the low side. They do it because it's cheaper, but the problem with that is you're going to have much more scrolling around of web pages and other documents. Whereas if you get one that, say, let's say 900 or more, say 9000 or even 1080, that will give you, say for a 15-inch screen laptop, that will give you a really good... you don't want it to be too high because it gets hard on the eyes, and you know when we get to a certain age our eyes are struggle a little bit, and Windows doesn't scale very well. But on the other hand, if you go for 768, it all looks a little bit Fisher Price, if you know what I mean. It's all a bit big and bulbous. We're going through all the brands tonight. That's not to decry Fisher Price in any way, of course. So I would spend your money on a new one. In terms of security software, which was the one you mentioned to me?
Well, Microsoft Security Essentials, and I've just kind of, as a pro term measure, sort of the McAfee thing that comes free with Adobe Reader Update.
Look, everyone would have that opinion on this. I will just say politely, I wouldn't put the McAfee on as my first choice.
No.
And I'll say it no more firmly than that.
But my old neighbour said exactly the same. I was just doing it in desperation.
Yeah, I mean, in desperation, I'd use the Microsoft stuff for free first. But I could recommend to you Norton or ESET or Kaspersky. All of them are solid, antivirus solutions, and try and get the whole internet security suite, not just the antivirus.
Sorry,
I would
go. Interrupt. When you say whole security suite, do you mean antivirus and malware and so on? Is that?
Yes. And also firewall built in as well, so you're not just dependent on the built-in firewall. And all of the people that I've mentioned to you have good solutions. Some of them have, I don't know if you have more than one machine or if you have a smartphone, for example, or a tablet. Do you use any of those sorts of devices?
Dominic?
The smartphone, was that relevant to the security?
Only in that with some licenses, so when you buy the software, you buy the right to use it under a licensing agreement.
Yes, I'm with you.
And some licenses would allow you to install on more than one machine, and that machine can be your smartphone or your tablet, for example.
Right.
So it's worth looking out for the different products that they offer you, different licenses, to say, we'll cover my laptop or my tablet as well.
I never thought about that because I've done nothing with my smartphone vis-a-vis security for some reason.
We're kind of in that phase where your smartphone is a computer that just happens to make fairly mediocre phone calls as well as a side trick. They're really portable computers, and we need to treat them as such. Just imagine, for most of us, we should imagine what would happen if we lost our smartphone, or worse still, it was stolen and someone could get past, you know, that four-digit password that we often protect our phones with. That, for most of us nowadays, that would be fairly disastrous because it has our emails and other information on it. So I think it is now, we're at the point where we should be thinking about protecting our smart devices as well as our laptop and desktop PCs.
Yeah, Dominic, thanks a lot for the call. We'll come back to David in Barnsley and to Linda in Kettering and Spike in Glastonbury. We've got David in Barnsley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Dalton. Thank you for taking my call.
It's a pleasure.
I have a question for your computer expert, and I apologise if this question has come up before. It's very straightforward. I have some files that date back to 10 years ago, and they're encrypted. That is to say, they're password protected. I put the password on. Mm-hmm. But for the life of me, I just cannot recall what the password is. And it's the same password for every file. Mm. And unfortunately, at that time, 10 years ago, I was just learning about computers, and I didn't start recording or diarying all of the passwords that I now have in a book.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you if there's any software on the high street that I could purchase that would enable me to actually circumvent the password, or at least find it and then change it.
I understand.
But before he gets there, we should ask Fabzi, you know, look, forget, I'm no expert, David, but have you tried keying in password?
I know it's not password, Dotton.
Okay, just check.
But I haven't put in password, but I know for sure it's not password.
Sure.
I can tell
sure.
David is a man of some quality, and he would not have used the word password for his password.
Oh,
David,
can I
just ask you a question? Are these Word files?
These are Word files, yes.
Well, I have some good news for you.
Oh, brilliant.
Word files in old versions of Words, when they were password protected, they were not actually encrypted. That's to say that the contents of the file wasn't scrambled. It was just merely locked. And what I have found is that if you use a third-party software provider that does Office-compatible software, so something like OpenOffice, or there are one or two others.
Something like what? I'm sorry?
There's one called OpenOffice, and there are others that you can download that are free. So those applications are usually used for people who have to either read or write, produce Word-compatible documents.
Yes.
But people who maybe don't want to go to the trouble of you know, paying for a copy of Microsoft Word or indeed Microsoft Office. And what I have found is that when you use these compatible products, and OpenOffice is one example, they ignore the password and just open the file. And I know this because I had the same problem of similarly aged files.
Right.
So I had ones that were about 10, 12, 15 years old, I think, in some cases.
Did you try keying in password, Fevzi?
No, but I'll do that next time, I guess. But if you use one of those applications, it should just ignore the password and open it up as if it wasn't there.
Contacted a cousin of mine, who in actual fact is an expert in coding at Sheffield Hallamshire University.
Whoa.
And he said that he could help me, but he's extremely busy. And he said that if he couldn't open it, he knew someone who could. And I said, well, I'd be very nervous about going outside of an inner circle of friends. And he said, oh, you wouldn't have to worry with her because she's a forensic expert at the police station. But I don't want really to go down that line. And I wanted to know if there was a way that I could, access my files.
And there is. And that's the easiest way of doing it. And as I say, it's because Microsoft, I mean, these were innocent days when we thought it was enough just to put a password lock on a file without actually encrypting the file and without actually scrambling it. So when it's scrambled, what it uses is it uses the password not just as a lock, but as a key to unscramble the file. But that's not what old versions of Word were doing.
Right.
And in fact, if you were able to just use another application and take a dump of the file, that's to say just ignore the format and look at the characters, but you could actually work out what they said as well, but it would lose all its formatting and
right.
so forth. So the
actual software, one of the softwares that you've mentioned is called OpenOffice.
Yes, that's right.
Okie dokie.
So,
I will check that out online. And can I say thank you very much for your help?
You're really welcome.
Thank you for your call, David. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
LibreOffice is another one.
LibreOffice.
L-I-B-R-E Office.
Yep.
So try those. They're both free.
And, of course, if there's anything on the programme that you miss out on, you're not able to quickly write down Fevzi's suggestions, you can always listen again on the iPlayer. The programme's up there for 30 days. Let's speak to Linda, though. And, Linda, thanks for waiting patiently in Kettering. Good morning.
Good morning, Dotton. Hello.
Hello.
My query is about my broadband speed. I've got BT Infinity. And we've had some problems recently. They thought there was a fault on the line, and an Openreach engineer came and done a bit of work outside.
Yes.
And then when he came inside and tested the speed on, I think it's called Ookla or something like that,
mm-hmm.
a website,
yeah.
He was getting speeds of over... We're supposed to be guaranteed 50 by
yeah.
BT. When he tested it on his website, he was getting over 40, 45,
mm-hmm.
you know, high 40s. And he said that everything was all right. But
well,
yeah,
it's not if you've got a guarantee. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Linda, but you've got a guarantee of 50 and it's testing at 40-something, then that's below the guarantee to start with. But proceed. Yeah.
But they said that was acceptable. But then when I spoke to the chap at BT, he said we should be checking it on BT Wholesale speed test. When we check it on there, it's not even 10. We're getting 4, 5, 6. Something like that. So my problem is I don't know which test is correct.
Okay.
And I'm a bit wary about having the Openreach engineer come back, because apparently as soon as they step in the door, they're charging you $129.99.
If there's no fault, they will charge you for the call out. That's true. And that's also true of, you know,
yeah.
if you have a line problem with your phone as well, you know. But
yeah.
It's not unique to BT, but they certainly do.
The thing
that.
Is, we've only got one computer. We haven't got a complicated setup.
Yeah.
We've got Openreach line coming in the front door direct to the computer. So there's nothing that could be affecting it in any way. So I'm not really sure... If I'm getting the speed that I should be getting.
I understand. I mean, you could try using the speed test app, or use it within, I mean, something called speed test, or which I think is the Ookla software, actually, or you could run it within a browser. A couple of questions, if I may, Linda. When you run your own test, does your computer attach to your internet using Wi-Fi?
No.
Or does it use a cable from the router?
It's a cable.
Okay, and that's the machine that you're testing on. And is that machine a reasonably recent machine?
No, it isn't. And that was my next thing. I wondered if it was to do with the computer being quite old. It's about 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah, and it's 6 or 7 years old. It can affect the speeds. I mean, in theory, it shouldn't, except that you're running software on it and the software itself can affect it. So...
But they're drastic difference in speeds, aren't they?
Yes, yes, they are. How? I mean, in practice, does it feel slow to you? I'm just wondering if it's unsatisfactory because you think that the measurement shows it's substandard, or is it unsatisfactory because it doesn't meet your needs?
Well, we're not heavy users at the moment, and it never has been. Our speeds never have been very good, and that's why I went on to Infinity,
yeah.
thinking that this would speed everything up brilliantly, but. No, I would never say it's been very good, really, no.
I would suspect it's very hard for me to tell sitting here, Linda, but I would suspect there's a bit of both, and I think that that machine might be having some impact upon that. I would certainly say to you that a machine of that age is even connected via a wire is unlikely to give you the full benefit of the speed that you should be getting. Whether then you are getting the speed that you should be getting is a sort of secondary question, but you would never achieve that speed because you just wouldn't, the machine wouldn't keep up with it.
Yeah.
But did you notice any improvement when you went to BT Infinity, that's to say the fibre-based solution?
Yeah, a little bit. And that chap, that engineer came, you know, the Openreach, when he came, we thought it did a little bit, but not a lot.
I think what I'd do is, do you have any other devices in your home, like a smartphone or a tablet?
No, that's what I was saying. It was very straightforward, just got this one computer.
So I think the thing to do is maybe speak to either a family member or a neighbour who'd be willing to come round with them, you know, handheld device, be it a smartphone or a tablet, and those speed test apps are available, you know, on those devices and also within a browser. And I would just get even wirelessly, I would connect it up and just see how it does. Or if there's someone who's got another more modern laptop that you could just temporarily attach using the cable, I'd do that, just because although I suspect that. You know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. I don't want you to get charged, so I'd want you to do whatever you can reasonably do. You can also get them to do some testing from their end without sending out an OpenReach engineer to you. Ask them to check what they can measure as the speeds from remotely, and see if that actually gives you a reasonable figure as well.
Linda, thank you very much for the call, and really do hope you solve your problem. I know you sound quite distressed about it. Good luck. I'm sure you'll get a reasonable solution to it very shortly. Spike in Glastonbury, sorry to keep you waiting. Are you okay to wait till after the news and sport?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem at all.
Really appreciate that. 0500 909 693. That's our number if you'd like to join in for this morning's gadget phone-in. If you've got a question about any of the gadgets in your house that you want our gadget detective Fevzi Turkup to perhaps help with, then do give him a call. We've got some of your texts and emails as well that we'll get to in a moment or two. But first, Spike in Glastonbury, you've been waiting quite a long time, and thank you very much for that. But go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Or good evening, should I say.
Afternoon. It's afternoon somewhere in the world, just not where we are.
Yeah, let me tell you. I just bought a soundbar for my television. Can I mention the brand?
Please do.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, Bose, B-O-S-E, yeah? Which is a pretty expensive unit, but supposedly it makes the sound, you know, much more clear and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it recommends connecting the soundbar to the TV via the optical cable.
Yes.
Which is no problem. I've got the optical cable and the television is compatible, and I'm just about to install it. And I was just wondering whether there's any likely to be any problem with the lip sync between the sound on the soundbar and the lip movements on the screen. You know, that can be very annoying sometimes. That's basically the question. Okay. Is the sound going to be in sync with the action on the screen?
There can sometimes be problems that are related to the combination of a particular TV and a particular soundbar, and it's related to how fast, for example, the soundbar circuitry will process the sound and push it to the speakers. Because mm-hmm. when it's optical, that means it's in a digital form, and it has to undergo what's called a digital to analog conversion before it can feed the speakers. And some digital to analog converters are a little bit slower than others. Some soundbars and some TV sets have the ability to adjust the sound, you know, to pull it forward or back in time, so to bring it back.
Yeah, the TV is connected via a HDMI cable to a Skybox.
Yep.
Which gives me HD definition and so forth. That's not going to be affected at all, I guess.
It should not be, because the sound will be separate. But again, there can sometimes be sort of synchronization issues between the sound and the picture.
I mean, the best thing to do is just
Spike, at this point, you've bought it. And frankly, even if you hadn't bought it, I'd say buy it and try it and just make sure you mm-hmm. buy it in a way that you
can... I think it's got a fairly good returns policy anyway. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, Bose are a very reputable brand. I'm sure you bought it from a reputable retailer.
Yeah. I'll give it a whirl, see how it goes.
Yeah, do that. And just a word of advice for people. For items over £100, buy it on a credit card in most cases rather than a debit card or a charge card, because you have additional protection. That means that even if the retailer won't play ball, the credit card company is as liable as the retailer.
Yeah, I shall try it, and Spike, I'm reassured.
Just another word of advice, Spike.
Tell me.
If you go into a store and you ask for a Bose, mm-hmm. they might think that you're referring to something else entirely. For example, you know, they might think you're referring to Oscar Wilde's lover. Because remember, Oscar Wilde's lover was called Bosie. That was his...
Indeed.
His, yeah, exactly. Indeed. So a lot of people say Bose. I haven't got a problem with it, but I don't know if you heard Fevzi, you know, sort of say Bose as if...
I shall stick to Bose.
Yeah. It's like with you, your name Spike. I suspected Spikey, but I thought I'll go for Spike for now, unless you correct me. You know what I mean?
Stick to Spike.
Yeah, I will too. Okay. With your permission, of course.
Yeah, thanks for both of your help.
No, it's
cheers,
a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
It's a pleasure. And thank Vinny.
You. All the best.
Yeah, you too. Vinny and Oxford's with us as well. Vinny, good morning.
Hi, guys.
Hi, mate.
Hello, right? Vinny.
I've got a Sony Bravia smart TV.
Yep.
And when I bought it because I had a Sony Xperia phone.
Yep.
And you could link it together, like mirror it and stuff.
Yes.
And I've since got an iPhone, and I've got Android tablets and an iPad as well, and none of them will connect. Like, I've downloaded numerous apps and all sorts, and I still can't get it to connect. I was wondering if there's any specific app I could download.
I'm glad you called us rather than calling 999, because remember that bloke that called 999 and said, I've got a problem with my Apple device. You know, I've called Apple. No, it happened,
well,
genuinely. I'm glad you called us, mate.
Okay, you can try apps, and the problem is that your Bravia Smart TV will be fairly limited on the number of apps and the range of apps that you can actually load onto that device. It may take some apps. You can try loading different apps onto the smart device. I would say that a better longer-term solution is to buy a bit of hardware. So for the Android devices, you could, for example, look at something like a Google Chromecast. And depending on what you buy and when you buy it, they can be had for as cheaply as about £15.
I've got them, but I bought the TV like so I could not didn't have to use one of those devices.
Yeah. The problem is
got a Samsung TV, and it works with my phone, his phone, tablets, and all sorts. So it's just to make it a TV that I've got wrong.
Yeah, I think any smart TV is more limited in terms of the ability to load apps on the TV itself and do useful things with it, and in terms of its future proofing, it's far more limited than if you bought even just a standard TV or just ignored the smart aspects of the TV and you bought a cheap TV streaming box or even audio streaming box. So you know, that's going to give you far more flexibility, you know, whether it's what's called a Kodi box, a K-O-D-I box, or a Google Chromecast, or even a second-hand Apple TV box. There's not much goes wrong with them, frankly. So you could look at something like that.
That's something like the Apple TV box or something. Because some of them, certainly specific websites, they let you see on your TV.
Exactly. So you can get a lot more out of it, because then you've got apps that are running on a standard platform, not a proprietary platform built into a TV set, although some TVs do have Android, but again, they don't necessarily keep updating the version of Android, so that eventually the Android software inside it is too old to run current apps. Much better to spend, you know, £20, £30, £40, £50 on a box and do it that way, just in terms of hassle. Life is short, and the useful life of your TV will be less short if you go that route than if you just try and keep tweaking, you know. Smart TVs are always, they're always limited, because TV set manufacturers are exactly that. They're not used always to dealing with smart devices, and of course Samsung in that respect and LG can be better, but even then, somehow when this technology goes into a TV set, it's frozen in time and it's not supported in the same way as a box. If push comes to shove, you can always replace and update the box, you know. But trying to keep the internals of a TV set up to date, I think you're on a hiding to nothing, frankly.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay.
I'm sorry, Vinny. But there are. I mean, you said you had a Chromecast.
I've got a Chromecast. I've got a Now TV box.
Yeah.
I've got a Fire Stick as well.
You're pretty well covered. I mean, I have to say the Fire Stick and the Fire TV box is one of my favourite solutions for this. And you can even load things like Kodi software onto those. But I would say experiment with your Fire Stick, because that's probably going to give you quite a wide range of compatibility. It should certainly work with your Android-based devices.
Cheers, mate, Vinnie. Thank you. Appreciate that. Good luck with that. We've got Roger in Blackpool with us as well.
Hello there.
Hi, Roger.
You got
a question for Fevzy. Go ahead.
Well, I've just got another one, since he's just been talking about smart TVs, but we're coming back to the subject that I was going to bring him about.
Okay.
Which was, now then, I look back to the happy old days of Microsoft Works.
Yep.
Right. Now, then that did everything that Microsoft Office did, right? And I was an accomplished user of Microsoft Access.
Yeah.
Now, I've just been back to the program now, as it is now, well, on the version that I've got, which is Office 2007.
Yeah.
And it's completely different.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to learn the whole thing all over again.
Yes.
Because all you've got, right. So I thought, right, well, I'll download OpenOffice.
Yes.
So I did, because... And it said, so I go on to the Access, the database section. You cannot use this without downloading JavaScript.
Yeah.
So I try and download JavaScript, and it takes me back to the Apache website. Why is this so difficult? I think I'm going back to pen and paper.
Okay, so for those that don't know, Microsoft Works was a sort of a less functional, a less bells and whistles version of Microsoft Office. So it had a word processor in it had a spreadsheet and one or two other applications, and it would do the basics, but it also had a different file format. That's to say that the files it created were not the same as those that were created by default by Microsoft Office. And it kind of died out as you know, the years went by and most people had access to Office, and other people weren't really interested in that. So I think if you were going to have to learn something completely new, then you might as well go for something like OpenOffice or LibreOffice. Now, sometimes they do use components of software that you then have to install, and that in itself can give rise to some security concerns. So it might be worth, for example, looking at another option like LibreOffice to see if it's less demanding in terms of those components. But you will still be in the position of having to just learn how that particular piece of software works. But I have to say, Roger, with a word processor, you'll only really have to learn about a dozen or so of the basic functions. Most of us don't use 80 or 90% of the functionality of our word processors because we don't need to. And we only, investigate how to do tables or something a bit twiddly when we actually need to do it. So I would say, instead of installing those other bits of software, try another free piece of software such as LibreOffice and see if that doesn't demand the same things. If both demand it, then just install it, but install it from a trustworthy website and make sure you've got your proper internet security switched on when you do it.
Asking you for your thoughts now this evening for our gadget phone-in, our Friday morning gadget phone-in. What's the question that you've got for our gadget detective about the gadget in your house that's not working perhaps? Mike says, Fevzy, what's the best way of prolonging the life of a laptop battery? Run the battery on the mains as much as possible to avoid using the battery, or might that overcharge it?
Yeah. Okay. So, battery science is something of a disputed area, and even manufacturers don't always agree. It's true to say that any rechargeable battery has a number of a life. That's not to say how long it lasts on a single charge, but how many times you can recharge it before it stops holding the 100% of the charge, and over time it will then diminish until it can't hold any charge at all. So. Most laptops have circuitry inside them, and as do smartphones, that mean that when they reach 100% charge, if you've already got it plugged in, it doesn't kill the battery by keep keep you on charging it, what a lot of them do is they go 100% and they'll discharge down to about 97% and charge back up, and they'll cycle around that last 3% or so to stop the battery from being damaged. That said, the battery still heats up by being connected slightly, and heat is not the friend of batteries. So for most people, we leave them connected. And bear in mind, a lot of laptops, the batteries are no longer removable anyway, so it's not an option if you're going to run it off the mains necessarily, the battery is being charged. So most laptops will the batteries inside them will last a good few years of normal use without you having to worry too much. If you really wanted to maximize it, I would say disconnect it if it's one that you can disconnect. You used to be able to buy blanking plates to sit where the battery used to go, so that it didn't look like there was a chunk missing out of the back of your laptop. If you can get a blanking plate, do that. And then I'd say just connect it maybe once a week, once every couple of weeks, charge it up, and then let it run down and then recharge it again. But frankly, although it may last a bit longer that way, my advice is don't worry about it. Use it as you would normally use it. Don't worry about leaving it plugged in. There are pros and cons, because if you unplug it and run it on the battery, then you're going to charge that up again, and you'll be using those recharge cycles, which are limited. They are limited to a few hundred cycles, but still limited. So I would say for most people, just use it as normal. Don't worry about the fact it's plugged in. And the evidence to support that is the fact that so many devices don't have batteries that can be removed anyway. That's increasingly the trend, that they're encapsulated, like the batteries increasingly in our tablets and smartphones.
Yeah, I went to junior school across the road from the Ever Ready battery factory in Tottenham, in St Anne's Road, Tottenham, back in the old days.
Yeah.
We're always bunking over, because they used to chuck out the ones that weren't working properly. We're always bunking over not to nick them, because, they chuck them out and everything, but, to relieve them of those batteries. And they seem to still work for us. Yeah. Sometimes, we do dangerous things like putting them under the fire, I seem to remember, or under the grill to boost them up a little bit. It's not advisable, not to be recommended.
Yeah, I mean, battery technology, it's an interesting thing, because one is, it's not really, the science of batteries is not always fully understood in terms of how to use them in practice. But also, although it's not a glamorous area, it's one of the things that's really needs to be improved upon. We've seen recently the failings of these lithium-ion batteries. Samsung learned to their cost that, a small error in their manufacture can lead to them catching fire or even exploding. And even a normal battery, a healthy battery, if it's dropped, you get cases of cyclists with a smartphone strapped to their thigh, they fall off the battery, they fall off the bike, the impact on the battery often causes burns. And by the way, that's one of the reasons why you're asked not to use a phone in a petrol station, because if you drop it, it can produce a spark. Mm-hmm. So
okay, I was at junior school, by the way, in those days. What did I know? Harrywood is with us, though, in Birmingham, in the West Midlands. And you want to talk about smartphones as well, Harrywood, amongst other things?
Yeah, I've got a bit of a problem with my phone, and I've updated my phone as well, so I've moved on to the next one. And when I go to send a mail, it just tells me my username is incorrect. And it's also happening on my iPad, which is linked. But when I go to my PC, I can send mails off my account. Yeah. Any ideas?
So when you set up an email account, sometimes they do misbehave, even though you believe you've entered all the right information. Sometimes when you have. So, you need the email address, the username, the outgoing mail server, the incoming mail server, and a couple of other bits of information. Sometimes when an account is not working reliably and you're really convinced that it's been set up correctly, rather than continue to edit and amend what's in the field and scrub it and redo it, I would say delete the account completely and recreate it, because sometimes with buggy software that can solve the problem. So I would suggest delete the account and re-enter the information that you know to be correct, and see if that works. If it doesn't work, then check the settings with your email provider, be it your internet service provider or whoever provides you with that, to make sure that you're using the right information.
All right, so delete it all.
I would delete the account and then set it up again, because sometimes it shouldn't happen. But my experience tells me that sometimes you can spend hours re-entering correct information, and for some reason, best known to itself, doesn't always work. And then you delete the account, repurpose it, reset it up as fresh, and it often just works. If it doesn't work, then there is something wrong with the settings, and you need to double check those and make sure they really are, one, the same as your other device, and two, the most up-to-date settings that you could use, and you can speak to your email provider for that information.
Okay, all right, okay. I'll give it a go.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, Heywood, thanks a lot for the call. Really appreciate that. This very quickly for you, Fevzi, from one of our listeners who's wants to know about, it says, Roy, it says, last time Fevzi was on, you read out my question at the start of the programme and said you'd get back to it, but never did. On my Mac, there's a pop-up window for the install and details of the upgrade to Mac OS Sierra when it first came out. And Fevzi said, don't be in a hurry to install. I'd like to know if it is okay to install now.
My advice, Roy, is if everything is running fine on your laptop or your desktop PC at the moment, leave it alone. I wouldn't go and upgrade it just at the moment. If you start to find that some software is no longer compatible, then would be the time. Or if you use a lot of other Apple devices and you want to use the handoff capabilities, then that might be an argument. But otherwise, you know, if it's working for you, leave it alone.